Ours to Protect. Brought to you by Cork's 96 FM, the IBI, and funded by Comisiún na mBan with the television licence fee. Check out ourstoprotect.ie for more info.
Our Earth. Ever in flow and motion. A dynamic symphony of forces, all working together. But in recent years, it's beginning to become clear that our world is poorly prepared to cope. And time is running out.
Every continent is burning. People are losing their homes, ecosystems are being destroyed. We're now over the line.
Over 26,000 species are currently threatened with extinction.
It doesn't even make the headlines. No one even knows about it.
There seem to be some serious conflicts of interest going on.
The industry is just concerned with growth.
This was the elephant in the room no one wanted to talk about.
I want others to see for themselves. This is all we've got. This little blue miracle.
This planet is our home, and it is up to us what happens now. History has shown that when we stand together, we can achieve great things. The clock is ticking.
And this morning we're launching Ours to Protect. That is the unmistakable voice of Kate Winslet. She narrated Eating Our Way to Extinction. It's a powerful documentary dealing with the most pressing issue of our generation, ecological collapse. And there's a very strong Cork angle to the documentary. Its producer, Mark Galvin, is a melancholic man. He's founder and director of the World Preservation Foundation. And he joins me now to discuss the documentary. Mark, thanks for being with us as part of this IBI, Ours to Protect campaign. Now, you travelled far and wide to put this documentary together. It's a fascinating watch, about an hour and a half. Very scary at times. But if you were to look back at it again, Mark, what's the worst thing you observed on your travels in making the documentary?
I suppose one of the big things was the destruction of the rainforest. When you see these ancient trees, which, you know, the cliche, the lungs of the earth being cut down, and they're hundreds of years old, and just all the biodiversity lost around each tree. Hmm. But then when you consider the scale of destruction in the Amazon, and they're trying to pass new laws in Brazil so they can actually destroy more.
Yeah.
And I think it was the Irish president called it out this week and said it was a crime against humanity. And, you know, what we've got to realize is that, you know, we're having these droughts in Europe, severe droughts in Spain and France and Portugal and Italy right now. And Italy, you know, the government said they lost 6 billion in crop last year because of the droughts.
Yeah.
And they've just had their first winter drought with their main river, the Po, is dry. So you can see, you know, we can't isolate it. It's one planet, one biodiversity that keeps the weather systems in place, and we've got to protect it. And not only that, do we have to protect the existing rainforest. The calculation we've done is that we need to plant about a trillion trees in the next 10 years to sequester more carbon. So it's about protecting what we have, but also planting on a pretty aggressive scale.
Yeah. So everything is connected, and the documentary makes that point extremely well. A lot of big names involved. The rich and famous seem to have taken it upon themselves to get into this climate debate.
Yeah, I think when you have money, I think you tend to be able to stand back and look at the world as well. And I think travel a lot as well, and you see the different changes in the world. And I think they're philanthropic as well, and they also have children and grandchildren. So they're looking at the future of the planet. So they want to get involved and they want to help. And we had some Fantastic people involved in our production. And we had, you know, Kate Winslet was kind enough to do the narration. And we had, you know, loads of good people promote the documentary. I think Leonardo DiCaprio put out a few tweets for us and posts and so on. So yeah, they're, you know, these people are seeing what's happening and they're willing to put their efforts behind it as well.
Our focus today is very much on food. And you mentioned Italy and the loss of crops. Our supply of food will be in trouble, is in trouble already, I think is the point being made.
Yeah, and you know, we've got to be realistic. You know, I get up in the morning, you see the great weather we're having right now in Ireland, and at first I'm thinking, great, it's the beautiful day, but in the back of my head, because I know so much, I have so much data on climate change, that fear kicks in as well, that, you know, we're heading in this direction where the planet is heating up. And we can see the effects now. The media covered the droughts and the fires in Europe last summer. I think we're going to have something similar this summer and the summer after. So I think the media are starting to report more. So people on the ground are feeling it. And I think Europeans are waking up to the fact that this isn't down the road anymore. This is right now.
I've been making the point that, yes, I love this weather, just like you do. But in the back of my mind, I'm also conscious that it's concerning for different reasons.
Yeah, and it's quite concerning. There's the BlackRock is one of the biggest funds in the world. I think they manage $7.2 trillion or something. And on their website, which is blackrock.com, you can see they've got a map on there and it shows critical levels of water security around the world. And when I looked at that map first, a scientist had sent it to me, I thought it was 2050, but it's actually referencing 2030. And if you look at that map, what they're telling their investors is don't invest in these regions because of the severe water security that's going to hit us by 2030. So we are going to have to start coming up with solutions. We have the solutions, actually. We've got a lot of the solutions in place. We need to plant more trees. People need to adjust their diets because one of the biggest contributors is animal agriculture. We need to help farmers transition, which I think the Irish government are doing a good job on now, and the EU. Like, I think the Irish government now have given incentives to farmers to do forestry, solar, plant more vegetables, and there's a fourth one, but they're good subsidies. So you can see that Europe is actually probably leading the way on subsidizing industries to change. There's a lot more to be done, but at least they're doing what they can now.
How much of that is driven, Mark, by the fact that two huge countries, France and Spain, have been in serious trouble for a couple of years in terms of their own crops, their own products?
Oh, 100%. I think you see Germany was on the edge last year. The River Rhine was so low, and their industrial region relies heavily on the tugboats bringing resources up to the factories. They were within, I think, 2 inches of the boats not being able to get through. So Germany's waking up, Spain, Portugal, France. The French farmers were asking their government for $2 billion in subsidies to buy feed for their livestock from, more than likely it would have come from South America, to subsidize because they couldn't produce enough in France because of the droughts. So, and that's a vicious cycle, because if you're buying feed from Brazil and South America, inevitably you're destroying rainforest, which contributes to the problem in France anyway. So I think we need to relook at how we eat. We need to plant trees, and the transition to away from fossil fuels to electric is very important as well.
Did I read where people who make champagne are buying land elsewhere outside of the Champagne region because it's now almost too hot to make champagne?
Yeah, so the champagne growers are buying land in the UK and Sweden. Because the grape is actually very sensitive. It's one of the most sensitive grapes. And that's starting to fail.
Wow.
I was watching the news last summer, and there was a woman, she must have been early 80s, a French woman who had olive groves. And she said the first time in her life, her olive trees failed. And, you hear that right through Sicily, the olives are failing because it's so dry, and olives will grow in a pretty severe condition.
Yeah, I was just thinking that. Olives grow on the edge of a desert, for goodness sake.
Yeah. So we're getting to a point where we need change. We need to look at our food security as well, not just you know, Ireland, even though we're on the edge of Europe. We also need to look at our food security. And I think there needs to be the European Union, the US and so on. There needs to be more investment into vertical farming, hydroponic, and all these kind of alternatives of producing crop, so that we can rewild a lot of the land that's there, yet produce food in a very efficient way with very little water, very little pesticides.
Mm. As individuals, as householders, as people with families, what can we do day to day ourselves to help? We feel helpless as one. I'm one person, you're one person. What can we do to help, or can we?
I think on an individual level, the one, if you look at the carbon footprint of an individual person, a lot of it is food. So if we reduce our meat and dairy consumption, we're automatically making a difference. Then obviously, how we use power, you know, the transition to electric cars, even though they're expensive, but again, governments need to step in and help people go on that journey. So as individuals, I suppose right now, the thing you can do is, you know, as we say in the documentary, it's on your plate. So that can have a substantial reduction in your footprint. And then if you can get involved in local projects where you're growing your own food, planting trees, as individuals, they're probably the most powerful things we can do.
Mark, good to talk to you today. And the film is well worth watching for everybody, I think. And thank you for being with us.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, that film, thank you, Mark. That film is called Eating Our Way to Extinction. You'll find it on YouTube. It's free access on YouTube to watch the whole film. It's on other platforms too. But that's the producer, who is Ballincollegman, Mark Galvin. We're here this morning launching the Hours to Protect campaign. It's the IBI Hours to Protect campaign. You can find out more on a special website, hourstoprotect.ie. Something we also want you to do is to check out our footprint calculator. It's footprintcalculator.org. It's a fascinating website. I browsed around it yesterday. You can check out your own ecological footprint. In other words, your own impact on the well-being of the planet day to day, just what you eat, the energy that you use, everything that you do. I did there calculator myself yesterday, and if everybody lived the same way as I do, you'd want 3.5 planets to take care of us all. And that's even, and we're focusing a lot about food today, and we've even at home started focusing quite a lot on food waste and trying to cut it down. We're also going to carry out surveys as part of this project to get information on environmental issues and promote it, the awareness of it with our audience. All the surveys will be available on our social media channels as part of the Hours to Protect campaign. Speaking about food today and just trying to watch the wastage of food. Since the food bin came into Coogan Towers, we are certainly watching the stuff that goes into it and trying to say, can we do something else with that without throwing it into the food bin. Joined by two people here, very involved in the food industry in their own specific ways and the sustainable food industry. First, turn to Orla McAndrew. Zero Waste Weddings. Orla, we talked about this a little while when you launched the idea, and I was saying to you there off air, in my time as a wedding DJ, where you'd stay over from time to time, you come down the following morning to sort out the gear, the amount of food walked into the carpet of a function room, you could fill black bags with it. That's where you come in. That shouldn't be there. Good morning.
Morning, PJ. It's good to be here. Yeah, do you know what? Food waste for me comes down to whether or not people have respect for the food that they have in front of them. And I think when we have food so readily available and so cheaply available, it's very easy to disregard the importance of it or where it came from. And I think how my idea, the idea of my business came into being was that I have utter respect for Irish food growers and the work that they do to produce food that's fit for consumption. So it's apparent to me that that could get wasted. Mm. And when did it become acceptable that there will be bag loads of food after a wedding? Like, it's just a given. People assume that that's going to be the case. Mm. But even outside of my zero waste wedding offering, all of my catering, I have everything so portion controlled because the idea of wasting perfectly good food is just goes completely against the grain. And I think it just, that comes from a place of utter respect for the work that goes into producing that food in the first place.
Like the stuff that you have at the afters of the wedding, the sandwiches, the sausages, the chicken wings, the whole that kind of thing, that's the stuff I find that gets wasted in stones, literally stones.
So I suppose that's just about using a little bit of intelligence and knowing that you don't need tons and tons and tons of food. And at that hour of the night, people are busy on the dance floor. Pop something out, make sure that there's something available and that it's tasty and it's delicious. But you don't need loads of, they've already been fed. They've already had an amazing meal, hopefully, during the day. And that's just like a little something to keep you going, give you that extra bit of dancing energy for a couple of hours.
So someone asks you, right, Orla, I want a zero waste wedding. I like what you do. What do you do? How do you do with the couple?
So firstly, we sit down and we find out what kind of style of service they're interested in, because that's kind of the only input that they can have. So whether they want sort of a buffet style or a barbecue style or a formal sit down meal, that's where their input comes in. And after that, then we're literally relying on our suppliers, one of whom is sitting right here beside me. And on the week of the wedding, we gather anything that's in surplus or that doesn't have a market. And we look at it on the Thursday. And from that, we create a complete menu and we serve it on the day. So literally on the Saturday morning, we're still planning out what's going to be on the menu.
Oh, so you're basing your menu on what's available to you in the moment, rather than deciding months in advance, which is a whole new way to plan. You mentioned your suppliers. One of them is sitting there, Brian McCarthy of Cork Rooftop Farms. Again, we've spoken many times as the rooftop farm grows from strength to strength, and there's a cafe there now. They started, we'll come back to the weddings and the food thing in a second, but they started as a lockdown project.
Yeah. It seems like an eternity ago now, but just 3.5 years ago, at the start of the pandemic, just an innocent COVID pastime project, I guess, and it somewhat mushroomed into a fully-fledged business, really. I suppose we just started growing vegetables on a rooftop, started documenting it on Instagram and different social media channels, and people resonated with the story and, like, the idea of it, and yeah, I suppose. Yeah, we've driven on over those 3.5 years, and now we have the shop, and we've a couple of market gardens and hens, pasteurized hens, and things like that. So
really, and I think a lot of local restaurants have said, "Do you know what? I need carrots."
Yeah,
he's growing them up on the roof. Do you know what I mean? And they're good carrots.
Yeah, one of the first things we had, I remember in the first few months, 51 Car Market across the road, and they got onto us asking, do you have any baby carrots? And of course, we were just starting, and they literally walked 100 yards, well, not even 100 yards, 100 steps to the rooftop to get the carrots to go into the...
Yeah.
And they were on the menu that afternoon. So, you know, that's a very unique thing to have in the city, I guess. And, you know, we're very proud to have that.
Well, I was talking or reading about someone during the week whose boast is that everything in their restaurant is coming from within 5 kilometres. There's restaurants in town now coming from within, like you said, 100 steps, their veg and stuff like that. So, Orla, you and Brian work together, and he's one of your suppliers. So what happens? There's a wedding coming up on Saturday. You talk to Brian when?
So I'll give him a heads up maybe 2 weeks in advance so that, and that's with all of my suppliers, so that they can be looking at and seeing what they might potentially have. Now, Brian mightn't always have something, but I've got a huge list of suppliers that I can go to so that for sure the couples won't be left wanting. Mm. So if Brian happens to have something, he'll let me know by the Wednesday. I'll come and pick it up on the Thursday, and it'll be a box of produce that's second to none, absolutely phenomenal. Mm. We'll work out a menu based on that.
And then you'll decide, right, what we can do with this. The one thing I would say might be problematic is people used to certainly like to know months in advance what they're having. Is that a conversation you have to have with them? Sorry, look, you'll find out your menu on Friday when I know what I have.
It's actually amazing. The response to that, without fail, has been, oh, thank God, we don't have to put any effort into thinking about the menu. That's somebody else's job now. So yeah, it's appealing to people, which that wasn't something I would have thought of first off. But yeah, it's fantastic.
National Food Waste Recycling Week is also this week. And again, with fruit and veg, Brian, you know, they turn easy.
Yeah.
As in their peak freshness. And we see that in our own fridge, in our own cupboards. Their peak freshness isn't what it was on Thursday. It's not what it was on Tuesday. But they don't have to be thrown out.
No. And I think, you know, a lot of that as well is if you're shopping locally from local producers as well, you're going to get more longevity out of your produce because the stuff has probably been harvested closer to the time of purchase. And no, certainly you don't need to be throwing anything out. There's loads of ways you can, you know, if you've got a bunch of kale that's kind of gone a bit limp, you can put it in a smoothie. There's loads of different things you can do. And I think one really important thing is as well, if you do have an element of food waste, do not put it in the general waste bin.
Mm-hmm.
It has to go back into compost. I think there needs to be a much stronger emphasis across the city on everybody using the brown waste bin when you have to use it, keeping it as small as possible. But when you do have that element that it goes back into the loop, that it's not being buried into landfill, the amount of food that is going into the general landfill in this country is sinful. It needs to be massively, massively
reduced. When the food bin and the little food bags, they were invented for that exact purpose, to keep the food out of landfill. It's a habit. You have to do some work to get into it.
It's also the bare minimum. I know you touched on that, but it really is the bare minimum. Like, there is literally no excuse for any of it to be going into the bin. If you are interested and you want to educate yourself, there's so much information out there about what you can do with peels, with lymph, you know, and how to bring things back to life as well. And storage is really important.
You said you meant you have hens.
Yes.
Do you sell eggs?
We do, yeah, absolutely.
Well, if you take a simple thing, we've started kind of in our house at the weekends, both myself and my son are very partial to an omelette. And my wife, one of the best things she ever did for me was teach me how to make an omelette. And if you can make an omelette, you'll never have
waste.
No.
It's always, you'd always find something to put into an omelette. They're little ideas of your life. We've been asking the young people in Cork what they would do to help save the planet. That's the basis of it. Alana Daly Mulligan went to see students at St. Patrick's Primary School on Gardner's Hill to ask them what they are doing or they think they should be doing to save the planet.
Do we have any concerns about the future of the planet?
Yes.
Tell me about that.
I do have concerns about the future of the planet, because if we continue the way we're going, like by throwing stuff in landfills and not recycling, like global warming and stuff, and like the ice caps are melting and a lot of animals are going extinct, like bees and wasps. So that might be bad for the future of the planet.
A lot of people don't do their part when it comes to the environment, because they think if just me doing something small won't make any impact, but if everybody does that small thing, it will make a massive impact on the world.
In a lot of hot countries, there's a lot of drought and a lot of them don't have access to clean water. So if, like, let's say they got dirty water, they may become sick, and then other people won't have access to any other clean water.
Do you think we're doing enough to protect the planet and make sure it's okay going into the future?
No, I don't think that we're doing enough. I think some people don't care enough, so they're kind of just throwing things away and not really taking care, where I think everyone, if they chimed in and did their bit, it would make a lot bigger impact for the future.
People might say, oh, somebody else will recycle or somebody else will do this, and if everyone had this mindset, then nobody would do anything and nothing would change.
I think that people need to remember that this is our planet and we need to take care of it.
It's just little things like, let's say, throwing bottles in bushes because, let's say, like, other people do it, like, it's not going to do our, like, planet any good. There's no point in, like, littering, let's say, just because your friend does it.
It's kind of like the Tesco thing. Every little helps. So if you just don't litter, then it'll make a big impact.
Tell me a little bit about fast fashion. Do you know what fast fashion is?
Big companies like Shein, people always buy off them because they're like cheap, and then the other stuff go to waste, like the clothes, and that's very bad for the earth as well.
I know about fast fashion, and in the factories that they work in, they leave out like a lot of gases from the factories, and they kind of just throw all the clothes out into dumps, and that's bad for the planet.
To stop making as many clothes, like, the best thing to do is donate to charity. Maybe if you have, like, older siblings, like, take their old clothes, get someone else's old clothes and make it into something new.
And a lot of companies like Shein, they mass produce a load of clothes and they try and sell them all, but a lot of times they don't, and the ones they don't sell, they get thrown into landfills. If it keeps going on over the next few years, the whole planet might be covered in landfills.
Big companies, they don't pay their workers enough, don't get paid enough for what they do, and they work really long hours. And it's bad for the environment and it's bad for them.
What do you think we can do to combat fast fashion?
People could maybe kind of do their research and check what companies would be using fast fashion and maybe try and limit down the amount they're buying from those type of companies.
You could shop in charity shops, or you can recycle and reuse your clothes and, like, design them the way you want to, and or get clothes off siblings or cousins.
If you were to give advice to the people of Cork on how they can be more sustainable and better friends to the environment, what would you say?
Don't go killing flies if there's, like, one in your window or something, because we need the insects and the bugs and stuff.
Maybe if you're cooking something or doing something in the baking, maybe kind of if limit your options and stuff, or if you're going shopping, try look for things that aren't wrapped in so much plastic. You can get bags and, like, compost stuff. Also, some people might not know what's going on in different countries. So, like, so you might go, oh, I'm just throwing out this water bottle, it won't do nothing. But who knows, it might end up in a different country where there is so many water bottles and the water is really dirty. So instead of throwing it out on the road, you might just think before you do it and put it in a bin, because it'll be better in a bin than ending up in a country or in the ocean with other animals and people.
If you make a lot of food, let's say on a Sunday, you could just go into town and drop it into penny dinners if you have any leftovers or something.
Also, if you've peeled your vegetables and you've, like, potato skins or carrot, like, peelings, you could start a compost bin, and you could use all that food waste then to grow more plants and different flowers.
What we do is, if we've lots of leftover food, if we don't eat it, we put it into the freezer because it stays longer, and then we can eat it whenever we need to.
Always make sure that you're doing your part, because even if you think it's just a small thing, it will make a massive difference.
There's a lot of wisdom in there, and we need to listen to
unbelievable this. Wisdom, actually.
Yeah.
The freezer one is one of my go-to. I will always make great use of the freezer, and I love the girl who said about the carrot peels and the potato peels and using that for compost. They're really clued in, you people.
The wrapper, the plastic wrapper, it always amazed me, Brian. Why is it that something that comes in its own wrapper, like a cucumber, has to have plastic practically glued onto it?
I suppose it's become, in a lot of situations, industry norms or standards, but they need to be reassessed and looked at. And we have a zero waste food dispensing area in our stores where people can come in and they can reuse their jars, reuse bags, and there's no need for extra plastic. It's cutting down on that side of things, right. But yeah, I know, fair play to those kids. I think there's definitely new generations coming through who would inspire. I mean, I was out at a school in Carrignavar last week, fourth, fifth and sixth class, and the questions I was getting back was just phenomenal. The knowledge of learned from
they're thinking about this, or I'll finish up briefly with you now, but they're thinking more about this than we are.
Yeah, and to be honest, my three young girls were the catalyst for me looking into it more. Like, the questions that were coming from my then six-year-old really started the ball rolling for me about what more we could do within our own home. So I do think children are the key. And if we tune into them a little bit more and think about them and their future, we'll all act a little bit differently.
Listen to them and turn our own skills to use the advice they give us, like you did being a chef. And Brian, you're not a farmer, well, you are now, but you weren't at the time.
Sure is.
All right, listen, thank you both for being here. Brian from the Cork Rooftop Farm and Orla McAndrew from Zero Waste Weddings, as we launch the Ours to Protect campaign. Further details available at www.ourstoprotect.ie. Thought it might be appropriate to finish up today with some words of advice from the granddaddy of them all, one of the most distinguished environmentalists of his time and our time, any time, still campaigning at nearly 97 years of age. I speak of Sir David Attenborough.
If there's one thing we all have to do, it is to avoid waste. Not to waste food, energy, plastics, or time. Each of us can use our actions and our voice to save our planet. We may be in different countries, of different ages, or facing different challenges in our daily lives, so the way we make an impact is different for each of us. What is important is that we try, and that we try as if our very future depends upon it.
Ours to Protect, brought to you by Cork's 96 FM, the IBI, and funded by Comisiún na mBan with the television licence fee. Check out OursToProtect.ie for more info.